concerned for him. She stretched out and buried her nose in Charles's ruff. She made herself relax, hoping that would help Walter do the same. This was pack, she thought, as warmth rolled over her from both of the other wolves. Trusting Charles to watch for harm with his better-trained senses, knowing that both wolves had proven themselves ready to put themselves between her and harm, and it was safe to sleep. This was better, much better, than her first pack. It was a long time before Walter quit imitating a stone statue and relaxed against her more comfortably. But not until he put his nose on her hip with a sigh did she allow herself to drift off to sleep. Chapter 11. Pain kept Charles awake while his mate and the rogue slept. His leg and chest were making it quite clear that he'd been pushing too hard. If he wasn't careful, he wasn't going to make it down the mountains. But it was the thought of the witch that kept him alert as the snowstorm wailed around them. He'd never felt anything like that, obedience wrapping him in impossible layers until he could do nothing but respond as she asked. He was too dominant for even his father to do that, but he'd heard it described. The descriptions had fallen short by a long shot. If he hadn't already been convinced of the correctness of his father's careful screening of the dominants under his rule before he allowed them to become alphas, that would have done it. How terrifying it was for someone to have that kind of power over you, even if you trusted him. His respect for the bravery of the submissives in his father's pack had gone up another couple of notches. If Anna hadn't distracted the witch and broken the spell, he drew in a harsh breath, and Anna made a little noise in her throat, comforting him, even in her sleep. Panic long since over, or mostly over. He'd had time to think about the way that spell had worked. And he still had no idea how the witch had been able to use his father's pack bonds, the way she had. His father needed to know that she could do that, that a witch could break into the pack's magic. As far as he knew, nothing like that had ever happened before. Only his pain and the understanding that he was going to have to pay attention to the limits of his body kept him where he was, instead of running to the car. He had to warn his father. If Anna hadn't been there, and how had she known what to do? Outside of pack magic, most wolves had very little magic, and he'd sworn that Anna was no exception. He knew her scent very well, and she did not smell of magic. If their mating had been completed, then she might have drawn on his. He lifted his head and smiled toothily. Anna wasn't mated yet, but her wolf was. He'd felt her call on her wolf when the witch bespelled her, but he hadn't thought it would do any good. Fat lot, he knew. The wolf had used his magic to break the witch's spell, and Anna hadn't been accepted into the Marrock's pack yet, so the witch's infiltration of the pack bonds hadn't allowed her to get to Anna the way she'd controlled him. A soft sound amidst the howl of the wind broke his train of thought. Something was walking in the trees. Even though it was a safe distance from where they slept, he listened and waited for the fickle wind to shift and carry scent to him. If it was the witch, he would gather his chicks and run, aching chest and leg be damned. But it was someone else who stepped out of the trees and stopped so he could get a good, clear look at him. Asiel. Slowly, Charles crawled out from under the tree. Anna sighed and resettled, exhaustion making it hard for her to wake up. He held very still until he heard her breathing even out again. Then he started toward their intruder. Since Asiel had joined the Marrock, Charles had never seen him outside Aspen Creek. He didn't like it that the first time was here and now. It told him that whatever Asiel knew, it wasn't going to make his life easier. He also didn't like his inability to cover up his limp. Charles seldom bothered showing off, but he did this time. He called the magic to him and let it rip through his body, changing as he walked. It hurt, but he knew it didn't show on his face or make his limp any worse. If he'd been healthier and the spirits willing, he might even have been able to conjure up a new pair of snowshoes instead of having to wade. At least the snow on the bench, regularly scoured by the wind, was only a foot or so deep most places. Half of that had fallen tonight. Asil smiled a little, as if he recognized Charles's power play for what it was. But he dropped his eyes. Though Charles knew better than to trust the submission in the other's body language, it was enough for now. Charles kept his voice low.
How did you find us?
It was an important question. They were nowhere near the place they'd have been camping if he and Anna had followed the trip as he'd outlined it with Tag. Had he done something stupid that would let the witch find them too? The oddities of the past 24 hours had badly shaken his confidence, and that, and his half-crippled body, was making him crankier than usual. Asil kept his shoulders relaxed under the thick coat he wore.
As we age, we all gain abilities, yes? Your father can talk to his wolves in their heads, no matter how far away they are. Me? I can always track my packmates. If you hadn't taken off like scared rabbits, I'd have come upon you hours ago.
Why are you here?
Charles gritted out. He wasn't irritated about the scared rabbit comment. He wasn't. Getting angry around Asil was never a good idea. The self-absorbed, arrogant Moor would feed you your anger back with a healthy dose of humiliation. Charles had never fallen victim for all of Asil's baiting, but he'd seen many who had. You don't survive as long as Asil had without becoming a cunning predator.
I came to apologize, Asil said,
raising his eyes so that Charles could read the sincerity in them.
Sage told me something of what Anna endured. If I had known what you were dealing with, I would not have made trouble between you and your mate.
You didn't make trouble between us, said Charles,
impossible though to doubt that Asil meant what he said.
Good. And whatever assistance I can offer to help you and your mate is yours.
He looked toward the log where Anna and Walter were hidden.
In my fit of remorse, it occurred to me that I might be of some assistance with your rogue, but it looks as though you have everything under control.
Charles felt his eyebrows rise. Under control was not exactly how he'd have described the last day.
Appearances are deceiving, then. Do you know why a witch would be looking for you?
Asil's face went blank, his body utterly still.
Witch?
She was asking about you specifically.
He rubbed his forehead because he'd be damned if he'd rub his aching chest while Asil could see him.
Or how she could tap into my father's pack bonds to take tighter control of me than my father has ever managed.
A witch?
Asil said.
Here?
Charles nodded curtly.
If you don't know anything about her, how about a female werewolf who seems to be connected with her somehow? One whose coloring matches your mate's.
His voice trailed off because Asil, his face still oddly blank, dropped to his knees. Not like he was kneeling before Charles, but more as if the joints had quit working right. It reminded Charles of the way Walter had done the same thing earlier. But it wasn't wonder or the unexpected grace of Anna's presence that caused this. The scent of Asil's violent emotions washed over him, impossible to sort out anything specific from the storm, except that pain and horror were both in the forefront.
It is her, then, Asil whispered. I had hoped that she would die and be gone forever. Even when I heard what the rogue looked like, I hoped it was someone else.
That was why Charles didn't believe in coincidences.
You know the witch?
The Moor looked at his black-gloved hands, then buried them in the snow. He closed his eyes and shuddered. When he opened them, they sparkled with gold highlights.
It's her. She stole it. And she can no more hide from me if I look than I can hide from her here.
Charles took a deep breath and counseled himself to patience.
What did she steal? And who is she?
You know, Asil said. She's the one who killed my Sarai.
He took his snow-covered hands and scrubbed them on his forehead. Then he added the unbearable part.
She stole my mate bond when she did.
Charles knew, as did anyone who had heard the stories of the Moor, that Asil and his wife's mate bond had brought with it an unusual gift, empathy. He didn't do anything dumb, like ask Asil if he was certain, though he'd never in his life heard of such a thing. And to be tied to a witch, a black witch with empathy, was possibly the worst thing he'd ever heard of. No wonder Asil had asked his father to kill him.
This witch looks to be barely out of her teens. Sarai died 2 centuries ago.
Asil bowed his head and murmured,
I swear to you, I did not expect her to find me. Your father's safeguards held for all this time. If they hadn't, I'd have forced him to kill me the very first day I came to Aspen Creek.
He swallowed.
I should not have allowed him to make me one of the pack, though. If she reached through the pack bonds, the only access she could possibly have is through me. Through our mate bond.
Chilled, Charles stared at the Moor and wondered if he could possibly be as mad as he'd always claimed. Because if he wasn't, this witch was even more of a problem than Charles thought. Crystalline wolf eyes gazed up at him, looking out of Asil's dark face while snow coated both of them.
Tell me about the wolf who looked like my Sarai.
Desperation and despair colored the old wolf's voice.
I never met your mate.
Charles's voice softened.
But the wolf with the witch is large, even for a werewolf. She's colored like a German shepherd, fawn with black points and back. There's some white on her left front foot, I think.
First 2 toes.
Asil spat, coming to his feet in a rage that was undeniably real for all that it had come upon him instantaneously.
How dare she use Sarai's form for her illusions?
Charles folded his arms. He was going to have to sit down soon. The pain was making him lightheaded.
It's not an illusion, Asil. Not unless an illusion can pass on lycanthropy. The rogue we found here is her first victim. She attacked him, and he drove her off. Then changed at the next new moon.
Asil stilled.
What?
Charles nodded.
There's something strange about that wolf. She's only solid sometimes. Anna heard her, and she fled, but as soon as she was out of sight, her tracks and blood just stopped.
Asil's breath caught.
You know something?
They were all dead,
he whispered.
Who?
All the witches who knew. But then, we all underestimated Mariposa.
Mariposa? As in, butterfly?
Asil's eyes were black in the night.
I am not a witch.
Which seemed like an odd answer to his question. Charles considered him.
But you've been alive a long, long time, Charles suggested. And Sarai was an herbalist. A healer, wasn't she? You know some things about witchcraft. You know what this wolf is.
Mariposa is the witch. We raised her, Sarai and I,
said Asil starkly.
She came from a family of witches that we knew. My mate was an herbalist. She knew most of the witches in that part of Spain, kept them supplied with what they needed. One day, a tinker came to our door with Mari. She was 8 or 9 years old. From what we gleaned later, Mariposa's mother had only just enough power to protect her youngest daughter from the attack of another clan of witches. Her parents, grandparents, brothers, sisters, and all were dead. And her mother, too. The tinker found the little girl wandering by the burnt remnants of her house, and thought my wife would take her in, as he knew that my wife had done considerable trade with that family.
He sighed and turned away, looking out over the narrow, dark valley below them.
That was a bad time for all of us in Europe. The Inquisition had taken a terrible toll just a couple of centuries before. And when it was over, the witches started fighting for power. Only Napoleon kept them from exterminating each other entirely.
I know the story, Charles told him.
The only Western European witch bloodline to survive the power struggle was the Torvalis line, which was interbred with the gypsies. Witches were still born here and there into mundane families, but seldom had a tenth of the power of the old families. The Eastern European and Oriental witches had never established the kind of dynasties the Western European witches had.
They guarded their spells from each other, Asil told him, so each family tended to specialize. Maripota's family was one of the greatest of the witch families.
He hesitated.
But she was only a child, and this was their greatest spell. I can hardly believe they entrusted her with it.
What was it?
Her family was said to have guardians on their grounds, great beasts who patrolled and killed for them, but never needed food or drink. It was rumored that they made them from living creatures. They had a menagerie.
He sighed.
Such powerful spells, as you well know, are never made without blood and death.
You think your butterfly used such a spell on your mate?
Asil shrugged.
I don't know anything. All I can do is speculate.
He sucked in a breath.
She told me, before we sent her to another witch for teaching, she told me that the only place she really felt safe was with Sarai and me.
He paused, then said bleakly,
I was in Romania when it happened. I dreamed Sarai was being tortured and consumed. Her heart had ceased beating, her lungs could not draw in air, but she lived and burned with pain and power. I dreamed Maripota consumed my love, until she was no more. It took her a long time to die, but not as long as my journey from Romania back to Spain. When I crossed our threshold, Sarai had been dead for a while.
He looked out to the forest, but his eyes were blind, seeing something that had happened a long time ago.
I burned her corpse and buried the ashes. I slept in our bed, and when I awoke, Maripota was waiting for me, in my head, where only Sarai belonged.
He sighed, scooped up a handful of snow, and threw it off to the side.
I wasn't Sarai, to be blinded by the child she had been. Besides, I could feel her madness. I knew when Maripota decided she wanted me. So I escaped. I ran to Africa, and the distance helped thin the link. By that time, I figured out that if I was too close, she could make me do whatever she wanted.
He opened his mouth and panted several times, as if he were in wolf form and distressed.
For years I waited, sure that she would die. But she never did.
Asil hugged himself, then turned and faced Charles once more.
I think it must be some side effect of what she did to Sarai. That she stole Sarai's immortality as she stole our bond. I could not for the life of me understand why she'd do either. But if her intent was to create such a creature as her family was known for, it all makes sense. She watched her whole family murdered. Watched her mother die protecting her from the spell designed to kill everyone in her home.
Charles heard the sympathy in the other man's voice and countered it with truth.
So she killed your wife, who had taken her in, protected her and watched over her. She tortured her to death to provide herself with something that could protect her.
Black witch, his instincts had said, and black witches were a nasty bunch. One and all.
And now she wants you. Probably for the same thing.
Yes, whispered Asil. I've been running for a long time.
Charles rubbed his forehead again, but this time because he felt a headache coming his way.
And now you decided to come here and present yourself to her, gift-wrapped.
Aseel gave a choked laugh.
I suppose that's how it seems.
Until you told me she was here, I was still convinced that my suspicions were unfounded.
His face lost the touch of amusement, and he said,
I am glad I am here. She has some part of my sarai. I have to stop her.
I was considering calling Bran here, Charles told Aseel. But I'm starting to believe that might not be the smartest move.
Aseel frowned.
Who is more dominant? Charles asked him. You or me?
Aseel's eyes had been darkening during their conversation, but at Charles's question they brightened fiercely.
You. You know this.
So,
said Charles, staring him down until the other's amber eyes turned away in defeat.
How did the witch, using your mate bond and your ties to the pack, control me?
As soon as Charles went out to talk to Aseel, Anna had begun her change. She needed to deal with that wolf with her tongue rather than fang and claw. He was too good at riling her mate, and Charles was still volatile from his encounter with the witch. She didn't give any thought to Walter until she was naked and panting in the cold night air. She might have had 3 years to get used to being nude in front of people she didn't know well, but he hadn't. She glanced at him, but he had his head turned away from her and was staring intently at a nearby tree trunk. The perfect gentleman. She quit worrying about him and scrambled into her chilly clothes and boots because she could sense Charles's rising rage at Aseel. Aseel had put the Merrok and his pack at risk, but more than that, she was worried that neither Charles nor Aseel realized how close Charles was to his breaking point. She found it curious that she did. Boots on, coat on, Anna rolled out of their sleeping place and onto her feet. She didn't bother with the snowshoes, it was still early night. She glanced at the waxing moon. Only a few more days until full moon. For the very first time, that didn't make her sick with anxiety. With Walter in wolf form at her heel, she trekked across the bench to where Charles and Aseel waited. It was a bad sign, she thought, that neither Charles nor Aseel seemed to hear her approach.
Could she be tapping the Merrok for power, like Leah does? Anna asked.
Both men turned to stare at Walter and her. Charles, clearly unhappy that he hadn't noticed their approach. Aseel, the legs of his jeans soaking wet, seemed more concerned with Walter, who had his ears pinned back and was showing his teeth. Anna put her hand on Walter's neck as she performed the introductions. Aseel, this is Walter. Walter, this is Aseel. The wolf we told you about. Aseel frowned at the black wolf, who stared right back and lifted his lips to display his fangs. Stop that, she told Walter, hoping he would listen to her. What they didn't need right now was a dominance fight. It always took a while for a new wolf to establish his place in the pack. Interesting that Walter didn't immediately assume Aseel was higher ranked. We need everyone in fighting shape.
Walter rescued someone from the witch's wolf and ended up changed, Charles said. He's agreed to help us.
He could have phrased that a lot differently, Anna thought. Her hand touched the top of Walter's head protectively. Instead of dismissing the new wolf, Charles had made it clear that the wolf was under his protection and was a valuable participant in their attempt to foil the witch. Pleased as she was, she didn't want Charles and Aseel to fight, so she said again, Could Mariposa be drawing on the Merrok's power through the pack bond? Charles quit frowning at Aseel and said,
It certainly felt like my father's power, but my father cannot hold me like that.
Aseel looked grim.
A strong enough witch can control any werewolf who doesn't have a pack to protect him. It is forbidden by witch law, but it is possible. One of the problems Sarai and I had with Mariposa was that she was making people do things, like kill family pets.
and she has had time to grow even more powerful. I think that because she is through me a de facto member of the pack, she might have managed to combine your father's powers with her own. Anna wasn't certain of the implications, but Charles was obviously very unhappy. "Are we still going down to talk to the Marok?" Anna asked. "Even if he can't come here, shouldn't we warn him?" Charles went very still.
"What do you think your father would do if we told him the whole of it?" Aseel asked.
Charles didn't answer.
"Yes," Aseel agreed. "That's what I think, too. He'd be out here, after he forced all of us to go home. No matter that it would be an incredibly stupid thing to do, he protects his own and has as much confidence in his reputation of invulnerability as everyone else does. Killing Doc Wallace left him hurting, and he won't risk losing anyone else for a long time. Certainly not his son."
"No witch could control my father," Charles said,
but Anna could hear the doubt in his voice. Maybe he did too, because he turned his head and said more softly,
"We'll have to go after them ourselves."
Aseel suddenly raised his face to the wind and closed his eyes. Then he became very still. Charles whirled toward their campsite. Anna turned to look as well, but she didn't see anything, not at first. She seemed to coalesce from the wind and snow. Her fur glistened silver, gold, and shadow. They all froze, staring at her as she stared at Aseel. After a few seconds, the wolf hopped off the log and walked slowly forward, whining. Her tail wagged just a little. Aseel started to move toward the wolf, but Charles grabbed him, holding him back.
"Sarai,"
Aseel said hoarsely, limp in Charles's grip. The wolf lowered her head and dropped her tail in a classic submissive pose. She whined again. Beside Anna, Walter growled and placed himself between her and the other wolf, but the witch's werewolf had eyes only for Aseel. The wolf made a pleading, grieving sound. Then she turned and ran. Anna was watching her, so she didn't see what Aseel did, only that he was suddenly free from Charles's hold and running after the wolf who wore his mate's semblance. Charles didn't give chase. He just watched as the pair of them disappeared into the darkness.
"That's not good, is it?"
Anna murmured.
"No."
Charles's voice was grim.
"So, what are we going to do? Should we track them?"
"No."
Charles looked at Walter.
"But I don't think we need to, do we? The witch is still staying at that old Forest Service cabin."
Walter yipped a soft agreement.
"We're not going to tell the Marok?"
The wind picked up again and Anna shivered.
"Are you sure that's wise? Does your father have a witch in his pay who could help? My old pack shared one with the other Chicago pack."
"Aseel's witch has found a way to control a werewolf who has the protection of a pack," Charles said. "I've never heard of anything like that, so I don't think she's been spreading the word. Thankfully, witches are so jealous of each other. But if she's the only witch who knows how, we need to keep it that way. We can't bring a witch into this."
He was still watching the place where the witch's pet had disappeared into the darkness.
"What about your father?"
"Aseel is right. He'd want to handle the witch on his own."
"Could he?"
Charles started to shrug but stopped halfway, as if it hurt.
"She didn't have any trouble with me. That doesn't mean that my father couldn't fight her off, but if not, my father controls all the werewolves in North America, Anna. All of them. If she took him, she could have them all."
"Is that what she wants?"
Charles was swaying a little. She saw.
"I don't know. She's been looking for a seal for a long time. But my father, he's quite a prize."
Anna took a step closer to Charles and wrapped an arm around his waist to steady him.
"Are we safe here for the rest of the night, or will she come for us?"
He looked down at her and sighed.
"Safe as anywhere, I expect. She has Aseel to occupy her. Poor old Moore. If I were in any kind of shape, I'd have gone after them. But he's on his own tonight.
A humorless smile came and went on his face.
We don't have any choice but to spend the rest of the night here, he told her. I need food and rest before I'm good for another mile of travel.
She parked him on one of the downed trees, in a place that was somewhat sheltered from the wind, and rebuilt the campfire. Walter blocked the wind as she used a glob of sterno and the lighter to force a fire out of the driest chunks of wood she could find. While the water heated, Anna rebandaged Charles's ribs with strips of a clean shirt. Docile as a child, he let her do it. She fed him two of the freeze-dried meals, gave one to Walter, and ate another. When they were finished, she kicked piles of snow onto the struggling fire until it was out completely, then urged Charles back into their original shelter. She was too tired to try changing again, and Charles was in worse shape. Walter curled up in front of them both, effectively blocking the wind and snow that tried to reach them. Anna opened her eyes in the darkness, certain that something had wakened her again. She raised her head from Charles's warm, sweet-smelling skin and looked around. Walter was nowhere to be seen, and sometime in the night she and Charles had reversed positions, so he lay between her and danger. The wind and snow had ceased, leaving the forest silent and waiting. "Me transmiti sorsum, Caledoni," she murmured. Too bad Scotty wasn't around to beam them to safety. There was something about the heavy atmosphere that was frightening. She listened hard, but heard nothing. The weighted silence pounded on her ears and made the beat of her heart even louder in the stillness of the winter night. Her heartbeat, her breath, was the only thing she could hear. "Charles?" she whispered, touching his shoulder tentatively. When he didn't respond, she shook him. His body fell away from her. He'd been lying on his side, but he rolled limply out from under their barely adequate shelter and onto the snow. The moonlight illuminated him almost as well as daylight could have. Her breath stopped in her chest, followed by a rush of pain that made her eyes water. Blood had drenched his back all the way through his coat. Black glistened on her fingers. Blood. His blood. No! She sat up, hitting her head on the dead tree they were sleeping under, but she ignored the pain and reached out to him. Charles! Bran sat bolt upright in his bed, heart pounding and breathing rapidly. The cool air of his bedroom brushed over his sweating body. Witch.
What's wrong?
Leah rolled over and propped her chin on her hands, her body relaxed and sated.
I don't know. He took a deep breath. But there had been no strangers in his room.
Though his head cleared quickly, the memory of his dream eluded him, everything except that one word. Witch. His cell phone rang.
What's wrong, Da?
Samuel's voice was wide awake. Why did you call me? It took Bran a moment to understand Samuel wasn't talking about a phone call. He rubbed his face and tried to remember. Witch. For some reason, the word sent cold chills down his spine. Maybe he'd been dreaming of the past. He didn't do it often anymore, and when he did, it wasn't about the witch. It was about all the people who died beneath his fangs after the witch was dead. No. It didn't feel like a dream of memories. It felt like a warning. As soon as he thought that, he felt again the urgency that had woken him up. Something was wrong. What did I say? His voice obeyed him, sounding only calm and curious.
Wake up,
Samuel said dryly.
Not very helpful.
Bran ran his fingers through his hair.
I'm sorry for disturbing you. I was asleep.
Samuel's voice softened.
Was it a nightmare, Da?
As if in response to his question, Bran saw an image, part of his dream.
Charles is in trouble. From a rogue?
Samuel spoke with polite incredulity.
I've never seen a rogue that could make Charles break a sweat.
Witch. But not his witch, not the witch who had turned him into a monster so long ago. Dead, but never forgotten. A different witch.
Da?
Wait, let me think. After a moment he said, Charles and Anna went out after the rogue 2 days ago.
Sometimes just speaking things aloud helped him jog loose whatever he'd been dreaming about. Dream warnings sucked. He eventually remembered what they were about, but sometimes only after everything was over. Asil came by that evening. He was angry with me for sending Charles out so soon after he'd been wounded, Bran said.
Asil was worried about Charles,
Samuel sounded skeptical. Exactly my thought. Astounding. Though he wasn't too upset until...
What?
Bran rubbed his forehead. I'm too old. I forgot. What a stupid thing. Well, that's explained.
Father?
He laughed. Sorry. Asil took off yesterday morning, presumably after Charles, but I just figured out why. The rogue's description matches Sarai's wolf. Asil's mate.
She's been dead a long time.
200 years. Asil told me he'd burned her body and buried the ashes himself, and old as he is, he still cannot lie to me. She's dead. Leah rolled off of her side of the bed and gathered up her clothing. Without looking at him, she stalked out of his bedroom to her own. He heard her shut her door behind her, and knew he'd hurt her by having this conversation with Samuel instead of his mate. But he had no time to apologize. He just got an odd insight. Witch. Samuel, he said, feeling his way.
Why would you burn a body?
To hide its identity? Because it's too cold to bury a body? Because their religion requires it to prevent the spread of disease? Because there are too many bodies and no one has a bulldozer handy? Am I getting warm? He was too worried to be amused. Why would Asil have burned Sarai's body in Spain during the Napoleonic Wars?
Witch.
Witch. I dreamed of a witch, Bran said, sure now that it was true. The Moor's mate was tortured to death over days, Samuel said reflectively. I always assumed it was a vampire. A witch would never have been capable of holding a werewolf for days. Kill her, yes, but not torture. I know of one who could. Grandmother's been dead for a long time, Da, Samuel said cautiously.
Killed and eaten, Bran said impatiently. I merely pointed out that we know of one exception. Where there is one, there may be others.
Sarai was the Moor's mate, and they were part of a pack. It wasn't like it was with us, and Sarai was killed 200 years ago. Witches live a human lifespan. Asil told me he'd been dreaming lately. Of her. I assumed he meant Sarai. There was only silence on the other end of the phone. Samuel knew about those dreams, too. I don't know anything, said Bran. Maybe Sarai was killed by a vampire, and the wolf having her coloring is just coincidence. Maybe Asil burned Sarai's body because he couldn't stand to think of her rotting in the grave. Maybe my dream was just that, and Charles is coming back with our rogue right now.
You know, said Samuel reflectively, you just proved your point better by arguing against it than you did arguing for it. I wonder if that says anything about how your mind works.
Or yours, said Bran, smiling despite himself. I'm going out to check on Charles.
Good, said Samuel. Do you want me to come back?
No.
Are you staying with Adam or Mercy?
I am your son, he said smugly, despite the underlying worry in his tone.
At Mercy's, of course.
Bran smiled as he hung up the phone. Then he got out of bed and dressed for a drive. He paused outside of Leah's closed door, but what was wrong between them could not be changed. He didn't even want it to change, only regretted that she was so often hurt. In the end, he let her be. He didn't leave a note. She wouldn't care where he was going, or why. Anna's throat hurt from crying as she lay over Charles's cooling body. Her face was wet with tears and blood that froze in the bitter cold. The ends of her fingers burned from the snow. He was dead. And it was her fault. She should have realized the bleeding was worse than he'd let on. She'd only had him a few days.
She levered herself off him and sat cross-legged on the cold ground, studying his exotic and handsome face. He'd lived 200 years or more, and she knew so little of that time. She wanted all the stories. What had it been like growing up a werewolf? What mischief had he gotten up to? She didn't even know his favorite color. Was it green, like his bedroom?
Red. It's red,
his voice whispered in her ear, startling her. But that was impossible, wasn't it? She reached out to touch Charles's body, but she just blinked once and was lying flat on her back underneath a Charles who was very much alive, though the left side of his face looked as if some beast had clawed him. She was panting, and her hands hurt as they slowly changed back to human. Was she the one who'd hurt him? Her heart felt as though it had been stopped in her chest and only now started beating. Charles, she managed. His face didn't move very much, but she saw his relief anyway and felt it in the relaxing of his hold. Briefly, he put his face down against her neck and breathed against her ear. When he pulled back, he rolled off of her and said,
"All you had to do was ask."
She sat up, feeling weak and disoriented. "Ask?"
"What my favorite color was."
She stared at him. Was he making a joke of it?
"You were dead," she told him. "I woke up, and there was all of this blood, and you weren't breathing, you were dead."
A growl from behind startled her. She'd completely forgotten about Walter.
"I smell it too, Wolf," Charles said,
the gouges on the side of his face rapidly fading.
"Witchcrafting. Did the witch take anything of you, Anna? Skin? Blood or hair?"
When the wolf had appeared, Mary had grabbed at her hair.
"Hair?"
Her voice was so hoarse she almost didn't recognize it.
"When there are witches about, it's good to keep them at a distance," he said. "Your hair allowed her to get into your dreams. If you had died there, you'd have died for real."
She knew that would be important in a minute, but not right now. A little frantically, she unzipped his coat. He caught her hands and said,
"What is it you want? Can I help?"
His hands were so warm, but he'd been warm before. "I need to see your back." He released her, stripped out of his coat, and still kneeling, turned so she could see that the strips of shirt she'd wrapped around his torso were free of blood. She put her head against his shoulder and breathed in his scent. Underneath, she could smell old blood and the tang of a healing wound. She grabbed his shirt in both hands and tried to collect herself.
"It was just a nightmare?"
she said, afraid to believe. Afraid that had been the truth and this was the dream.
"No," he said. "It was the sum of the worst of your fears."
He turned in her grip and wrapped both arms around her, surrounding her cold body with his heat. He whispered in her ear,
"We've been trying to wake you up for about 15 minutes.
He paused, then said,
"You weren't the only one who was frightened. Your heart stopped. For almost a minute, I couldn't get you to breathe. I imagine you'll have bruises. CPR is one of those things I find pretty difficult. The line is so thin between forcing air out and breaking ribs."
He tightened his hold and whispered,
"One of the problems with having a brother who is a doctor is that I know how few of the people who need CPR survive."
Anna found herself patting him on the back, up on his shoulder, well away from his wound.
"Yeah, well, I bet most of them aren't werewolves."
He pulled back after a moment and said briskly,
"You're cold. I think it's time for more food. We still got a couple hours before daylight."
"How are you?"
He smiled.
"Better. A lot of food, a little rest, and I'm almost as good as new."
She watched him closely as he pulled a few packets of food out of the pack, things that didn't need hot water, more freeze-dried fruit and jerky. She ripped a piece of jerky loose with her teeth and chewed.
"You know, I used to like this stuff."
Eating the bits she fed him, Walter spread himself out over her feet. Big as he was, he soon had her frozen toes toasty warm. They lay down again, Anna sandwiched between the males, Charles at her back once more.
"I'm afraid to go back to sleep," she said.
And it wasn't because he'd told her the witch could have killed her, either. She couldn't face seeing Charles's dead body again. Charles tightened his hold on her and began singing softly. His song was Native American. She recognized the nasal tone and odd scale. Walter sighed and moved into a more comfortable position as they all waited for morning. Chapter 12. The darkness bothered Bran not at all as he followed Tag's directions to the place he and Charles had thought would be the best starting point. He passed Asiel's Subaru and hesitated. If Asiel had been going after Charles, he'd have known the fastest way there. But Charles would be headed back to his car if something had gone wrong, so Bran kept driving. Other things he might do ran through his head. There were witches in the pay of the wolves, not his pack. He didn't deal with black witches, and most white witches weren't powerful enough to be useful. But there were witches available to him. If he had a 200-year-old witch capable of holding and torturing a werewolf for 2 days, he had no intention of advertising the fact and encouraging other witches to imitate this one, especially since she, like Bran's mother, might have gotten her ability through some kind of binding to a werewolf. No, best keep the witches out of it. He could call Charles back. That was a harder thing. Telepathy was how his mother had gotten her nasty little chains upon him in the first place. She was why he could no longer read the thoughts of others. After he'd killed the witch who was his mother, the backlash had taken that talent from him, one of the many blessings of her death. Slowly he'd regained the ability to talk mind to mind, but never to listen in. The only reason his mother had been able to catch him through his talent was that it was one she shared. A rare thing, even among witchborn. He'd be surprised if there was another witch with that ability in North America. But he was still too cowardly to try until he knew for certain that his son was free of Asiel's witch. Of all the magic users in this old world, Bran despised and feared witches above everything. Probably because, had matters been different, he would have been one himself. He turned off the highway and drove up Silver Butte. Tracks of a wider-than-normal vehicle preceded him. Charles had followed the plans that far, anyway. Getting Charles's truck up the path the V had taken was a little tricky, driving all his other worries out of his mind. He was starting to think he should have parked beside Asiel's car when he drove around a blind curve and almost hit the V, which was nose to bark with a tree. He stopped with no more than 6 inches between Charles's truck and the V. He shut off the engine and parked the truck right there, because the trees were too thick to go around, and he didn't trust that smooth white snow not to hide a ditch. There had been no safe place to turn around anywhere in the last quarter of a mile. He wondered if he was going to have to drive the whole trek backward on the way out. He smiled sourly to himself. That wouldn't matter so much if they didn't make it out. Asiel had had time to meet up with Charles. Asiel knew about witches. Surely his son and the Moor could handle anything they found. If Charles stuck to his route, Bran hoped to find the lot of them before nightfall and get them out of there. He left the key in the ignition. No one was likely to come up here and steal the truck, and if anyone did, well, he could deal with Charles. He hadn't bothered to wear a coat since he intended to go wolf anyway. He stripped in the warm cab, steeled himself, and jumped out of the truck before completing the change. Opening car doors while in wolf form was possible, but usually it left some damage behind. And despite his son's frequent mutterings about how much he hated cars, Charles was fond of his truck. Bran settled into a steady lope, something that he could maintain all day. It had been a long time since he'd run in these mountains. They had never been a favorite hunting ground, though he couldn't put a finger on why not. Charles maintained that the cabinets didn't welcome intruders, and he supposed that was as good an explanation as any. Following Charles's intended route backward seemed to be the best manner to begin. Their whole loop wasn't more than 30 miles, and he could run the whole thing and be back to the cars just after nightfall. Except for the small porch with old green paint peeling off, the cabin hadn't changed substantially since the last time Charles had seen it, maybe 50 years earlier. It wasn't much to look at, a small log cabin like 100 other such places in the wilds of Montana, most of them built during the Depression by CCC crews. The logs were grayed by years of sun, rain, and snow. A battered four-wheeler with new cat tracks sat unobtrusively between the back of the cabin and the forest that crowded in behind. Charles stopped Anna about 30 yards downwind, where the trees still hid them adequately. As soon as he stopped her, Walter flattened himself on the ground at her feet, just as if he were her devoted pet dog, who weighed about the same as the average black bear and was capable of considerably more destruction. Walter's devotion was so obviously non-sexual that Charles couldn't find it in himself to object. He kept remembering Walter's impassioned, "I think I could sleep." He knew about being haunted by memories of death and murder. If she managed to give Walter some peace, he was welcome to it. Charles stared fiercely at the cabin and wished he wasn't frightened. It had been a long time since he'd been afraid like this. He was used to being worried about Samuel, his father, and more recently Anna, but not about himself. The memory of how Asile's witch had held him obedient to her as if she were his alpha cut through his self-confidence with a large dollop of reality. He rubbed Anna's shoulder lightly. He knew she wasn't as fragile as she looked. No werewolf was that fragile. And the old soldier was a survivor. Charles took some comfort from that.
"I won't be able to help directly," Charles told her. "If I get in her line of sight, she'll have me again. With a pack alpha, distance counts, and so does every eye or body-to-body contact."
Neither Walter nor Anna was a member of his father's pack, so they had no connection to Asile. Except for Anna's wolf's bond to Charles, that left them as vulnerable as any lone wolf. But he knew it usually took witches a while to gain a hold on a lone wolf, long enough that he could offer himself up instead. Her control of him had been instantaneous. He hated witches. Other magic users' abilities didn't bother him so much. Druids influenced the natural world. Weather, plants, and some animals. Wizards played with non-living things, but witches used the mind and body. Anyone's mind and body. They toyed with things that were alive, or had been alive. White witches weren't so bad, though maybe that was only because most of them had less magic than he did. Black witches gained power by killing or torturing things, from flies to humans. "All right," his Anna said, as if she'd faced witches every day of her life. "If they are here, you'll take on her wolf, and probably Asile. That should keep even you pretty busy." The few hours of rest he'd had, a lot of food, and a slow, easy pace this morning had done much to restore Charles to himself. It gave him a chance at taking down the witch's pets. Anna shivered a little under his hand, a combination of eagerness and nerves, he thought. She had reacted to that dream as if it had been an attack on him rather than on her, though she was the one who had stopped breathing. Walter raised his eyes to Charles, and he saw in the other's gaze a determination to protect her by any means necessary. It bothered Brother Wolf to see that in another male's eyes, but under the circumstances, Walter was in a better position to save her than Charles was.
"I'm going to do a little recon. For this part, I'd like you to wait here, all right?"
"I'll wait," Anna said.
"Don't get impatient. This might take a while."
The cabin was backed up to the forest, with 20 feet cleared around the front and one side. It was not where he would have chosen to hide from werewolves, but then he didn't think she was afraid of him at all. He certainly hadn't given her any reason to fear him. To his surprise, Walter followed him, disappearing into the shadows until the only way Charles knew the other wolf was there was from his scent. The spirits of this forest had indeed taken Walter as their own to lend him their protection. His grandfather had been able to disappear like that. A stone's throw from the cabin, Charles became convinced it was empty. When Walter appeared a few yards ahead of him, tail wagging a slow message, he knew he was right. But he still waited until he'd circled the little structure and opened the door before he sent Walter back for Anna. Inside, there was barely room for the narrow cot and small table that were the only furnishings, unless he wanted to count the narrow ledge of a mantelpiece above the fireplace. The cot was brand new and still had sales tags on it. The table looked like it was older than the cabin. The hearth showed signs of a recent fire. The dead animal on the floor in front of it advertised who was living here. Witches and dead things went together. There were witches who didn't kill, but they were far less powerful than their darker sisters. The plank floor had shiny new nails and crowbar marks where she had pried it up and nailed it back in again. When he stepped near the cot, he knew exactly why. He'd felt power circles before. Some witches use them to set guard spells to keep things they valued safe, and others use them to store power for drawing upon later. Since the cabin hadn't kept him out and he didn't feel the need to leave, he could only assume that the circle was the latter kind, which meant that there were more dead things under the floor. He took a deep breath, but the dead animal he'd already seen might account for the scent of death. And nothing was rotting. Either the animal she'd killed to draw her circle hadn't been dead long, it had frozen in the cold, or she had a spell to disguise it to keep away scavengers. Changing what the senses of others perceived was one of the major powers of the witch. His father said that Charles might have been a witch if he'd chosen to study. Bran hadn't urged him to do so, but he also didn't discourage it either. A witch in his pack would have given him even more power. But the subtler magics of his mother's people suited Charles, and he'd never regretted the path he'd chosen less than he did right now, standing in the middle of this poor cabin, stained with evil. The scent on the sleeping bag on the cot was fresh enough that he decided the witch had slept there the night before. The table held the remnants of a fat black candle smelling of blood more than wax, and a mortar with some ashes in the bottom. The remnants of Anna's hair, he thought. Something personal, to allow her into Anna's dreams. "What is that?" Anna said in a little voice from the doorway. He felt immediately better for her presence, as if her being there lessened the evil that had seeped into the wood and brick. Someday he'd tell her that, just to see the bewildered disbelief in her eyes. He was beginning to know her well enough to predict her reaction. It gave him some satisfaction. He followed her gaze to the eviscerated and skinned body laid out in front of the fireplace.
"Raccoon, I think. At least, that's what it smells like."
It also smelled of pain and had left claw marks on the floor, probably after it had been nailed down. He saw no reason to tell Anna it probably hadn't been dead when the witch mutilated it. What was she trying to do? She stayed in the doorway, and Walter settled in behind her. Neither of them made any attempt to come inside. He shrugged.
"I have no idea. Maybe it was to power the spell she worked on you last night. A dark witch gains power from others' pain and suffering."
Anna looked sick.
"There are worse monsters to be than a werewolf, aren't there?"
"Yes," he agreed. "Not all witches use things like this, but it's hard to be a good witch."
There was a scrying bowl, still filled with water, on the floor next to the raccoon. The interior temperature of the cabin wasn't much warmer than outside. If it had been there long, it would have been ice. They hadn't missed the witch by much. He didn't want to, but he touched the dead animal to see how long ago she'd worked her misery on it,
Its flesh was still. It moved weakly, and he had his knife out and its neck severed as quickly as he could manage, nauseated by the knowledge that it had still been alive. Nothing should have been able to live through the torture it had undergone. He gave a more thoughtful look.